Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We're reaching yet another staggering milestone in Gaza. Nearly 25,000 people reported killed, according to the Gaza Ministry of Health, 70% of them women and children. Another 61,500 at least have been injured. Several thousands more are under the rubble, many presumed dead.
As Israel continues to pound Gaza, Netanyahu is facing more pressure to bring home the remaining 130 hostages held there. We'll speak with Mossab Abu Toha, a Palestinian poet and author who was detained by Israeli authorities as he and his family fled Gaza. We'll talk to him about conditions there, including for his brother's wife, who's about to give birth. Then Israelism. A new documentary about the relationship between U.S. Jews and the State of Israel and their disillusionment as they begin to question Israel's occupation.
What we've been told is that the only way that Jews can be safe is if Palestinians are not safe. The more I learned about that, the more I came to see that as a lie.
Within the Jewish community, there's been a striking change.
They're really angry at the way they were indoctrinated, justifiably so.
We'll speak with the director of Israelism and one of the American Jews featured in the film as they head out on tour with 40 new screening dates around the country. And we'll look at the state of the Republican Party as the GOP presidential primary in New Hampshire becomes a two-person race.
I am today suspending my campaign. I'm proud to have delivered on 100% of my promises, and I will not stop now. It's clear to me that a majority of Republican primary voters want to give Donald Trump another chance.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has dropped out. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, the death toll from Israel's 15-week war has topped 25,000, with at least 190 Palestinians killed over the last 24 hours. There are reports Israel's blowing up entire neighborhoods of the besieged city, Khan Yunis, where Israel's targeted hospitals, ambulances, and schools. Palestinian families in Khan Yunis are now burying loved ones inside the Nasser Hospital complex.
Currently, dead bodies are being buried here inside Nasser complex. It's very difficult to leave the complex and go to any cemetery and bury them because we're under siege and anyone who leaves the complex is targeted. Last night, we lived through a horrifying night. The shelling wouldn't stop for even 1 minute. Buildings would shake with us inside. Shrapnel would fall on us.
In more news from Gaza, the Wall Street Journal is reporting the United States, Qatar, and Egypt are pushing Israel and Hamas to take part in what the paper describes as a phased diplomatic process involving the release of hostages in Gaza and the eventual withdrawal of Israeli forces. After the report was published, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he rejects the proposal because it calls for the war to end. Over the weekend, Netanyahu also reiterated his opposition to the formation of an independent Palestinian state, a two-state solution, despite pressure from the United States to support one. This all comes as Netanyahu faces more domestic pressure to bring home the remaining 130 hostages held in Gaza. Earlier today, the Israeli Knesset session was suspended after families of hostages disrupted a committee meeting demanding lawmakers do more to free their loved ones. Protesters also blocked entrances to the Knesset. On Saturday, friends and relatives of Israeli hostages protested in Tel Aviv. This is Maccabit Maia. Her nephews, Ziv and Gali Berman, are still being held in Gaza.
Stop the war. Stop the war. Take them out. Save them. And then, after a while, there is no victory without them out. No victory. Nothing.
On Saturday, hundreds of Israelis and Palestinians living in Israel came together to take part in an anti-war rally in Haifa, the third largest city in Israel. In the occupied West Bank, a 17-year-old Palestinian-American named Taufik Ajak was fatally shot in the head Friday. According to the group Defense for Children International, Ajak was killed when Israeli settler and soldiers opened fire on him in Ramallah. He grew up in Louisiana near New Orleans. He moved to the West Bank last year with his family. Ajak is at least the 93rd Palestinian child killed in the occupied West Bank since October 7th. On Saturday, Taufik Ajak's father spoke to reporters at his son's funeral.
But come here on the ground and see what's going on. Come here and test and see for your own eyes what kind of life we are living here. What is the pressure they put us under? What is the women's and kids and how many fathers and mothers have to say goodbye to their children? How many more? But it will come, inshallah, one day.
Israel carried out airstrikes on Syria and Lebanon over the weekend. Israel blew up a building in Damascus, Syria, killing five advisors from Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. In a separate attack, an Israeli drone struck a car near the Lebanese border. Four people reportedly died, including a member of Hezbollah. Hours after Israel bombed Damascus, Iranian-backed militants in Iraq fired missiles at an airbase housing U.S. forces. U.S. Central Command reports a number of U.S. personnel are being evaluated for traumatic brain injuries. On Friday, the United States bombed Houthi targets in Yemen for at least the sixth time over the past 10 days. This comes as Houthi forces continue to target commercial ships in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden as part of a campaign to pressure Israel to halt its assault on Gaza. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has dropped out of the presidential race less than a week after he lost to Donald Trump by a record 30 percentage points in the Iowa caucus. In a video released Sunday, DeSantis said he would endorse Trump.
Yes, my endorsement, because we can't go back to the old Republican guard of yesteryear, a repackage formed of warmed-over corporatism that Nikki Haley represents.
With DeSantis out, the Republican race has essentially become a two-person contest between Trump and Nikki Haley, the former South Carolina governor who served as Trump's U.N. ambassador. Over the weekend, she campaigned in New Hampshire ahead of Tuesday's primary. She questioned Trump's mental fitness after he repeatedly confused her with former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Joe Biden is now running an online ad questioning Trump's mental capabilities, featuring Haley's comments.
Last night, Trump is at a rally.
You know, Nikki Haley.
And he's going on and on, mentioning me multiple times as to why I didn't handle January 6th better.
Nikki Haley is in charge of security. We offered her 10,000 people. They don't want to talk about that.
I wasn't in office then.
Confused and said he was running against Obama. He never ran against Obama.
And we did with Obama. We won an election that everyone said couldn't be won.
Obama wants to, he doesn't want to talk about it.
Well, you mean President Biden. So,
don't put our country at risk like this.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
President Trump also said Joe Biden will bring us into World War II. We'll have more on the Republican race later in the program. In news on the war in Ukraine, at least 27 people died in the Russian-occupied city of Donetsk when a crowded market was hit by a barrage of artillery shells. Local authorities blame Ukraine for the attack, which Ukraine has denied. On Friday, a Ukrainian drone attacked an oil storage depot inside Western Russia, resulting in a major fire. The Russian facility held about 1.6 million gallons of oil. In Germany, hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets over the weekend in nationwide protests against the rise of the far right. The protests came days after a German news outlet reported members of the far right Alternative for Germany, or AfD, party recently took part in a meeting where a plan was discussed to mass deport immigrants and, quote, non-assimilated citizens, unquote. German protesters decried the growing rise of the far right.
Es ist mir vor allem wichtig, weil ich das Gefühl habe, es...
It is particularly important to me because I have the feeling that the same thing is happening again, as it happened with the Nazis back then. The whole shift to the right is being normalized. People would rather work with the right than with the left, and it's important to set an example. There are left-wingers. We are here. We are many, and we are against it.
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has inaugurated the controversial Ram Temple, a massive Hindu temple built on the ruins of a historic mosque in the northern town of Ayodhya. The site was previously home to the centuries-old Babri Mosque, which was razed to the ground in 1992 by a Hindu mob, triggering the most deadly religious riot since Indian independence. Over 2,000 people were killed, most of them Muslim. The opening of the new temple is seen as an unofficial kickoff for Modi's re-election campaign for a third term and a triumph for his Hindu nationalist agenda. Here in New York, a 3-month-old migrant girl has died after suffering a cardiac arrest. She was staying at a migrant shelter with her family in Queens. This comes amidst an ongoing housing crisis for migrants, many of whom have been left scrambling for a safe place to live after New York Mayor Eric Adams imposed a 60-day limit for families to stay in shelters. The limit's just 30 days for single men. In Brooklyn, around 2,000 migrants staying at the Floyd Bennett Field tent facility, many of them children, have been facing below-freezing temperatures for days. Democracy Now! Was at Floyd Bennett Field this weekend and spoke with Fabiola Mendieta Quapio, a Brooklyn resident and immigrant justice advocate who's been organizing to help provide immigrants with essential needs and resources.
We've been receiving complaints about people getting sick because it's cold. They put the heat. They have heat inside. But still, you know, it's just in the area. The area is cold, isolated. Most of the people who live inside these tents, they're new arrivals, right? I don't think it's fair that they're going to get kicked out and make them go to the intake center again and reapply and wait outside in the cold. We're talking about families with kids. I think the city should reconsider about the 60-day rule, especially for families with small kids.
90 deaths have been recorded over the past week as winter storms pounded vast swaths of the United States. Tens of thousands of homes lost power over the weekend in Oregon and other states. In Tennessee, a boil water notice was issued to all Memphis area residents after water mains froze and broke. A federal judge in New York has ordered the release of James Cromartie, who's spent the last 15 years in prison after being entrapped in a government-orchestrated bombing plot. He's the fourth and final member of the so-called Newburgh Four to be ordered release. The men, all of them black Muslim converts, were sentenced to 25 years in prison in 2010 after being convicted on terrorism charges. Judge Colleen McMahon criticized the FBI sting operation, saying the men, quote, would not have and could not have devised the crime they were accused of. Visit democracynow.org to see all of our coverage of the Newburgh Four. President Biden Friday canceled nearly $5 billion in student loan debt for 74,000 people. It's the latest effort by the administration to provide much-needed relief to borrowers after the Supreme Court last year threw out Biden's plan to erase over $400 billion in debt for millions of people. The latest move will benefit teachers, nurses, firefighters, and other public service workers, among others. And in Park City, Utah, filmmakers and community members have organized vigils and protests to coincide with the Sundance Film Festival, which is celebrating its 40th edition this year. An international coalition of filmmakers organized under the banner Film Workers for Palestine is calling for a Gaza ceasefire, an end to Israel's occupation of Palestine, and an end to U.S. military support for Israel. Over 700 film workers have signed on to the group's mission, including the American actor Susan Sarandon, British directors Mike Lee and Ken Loach, Palestinian-American filmmaker Shireen Dabbas, who was Emmy-nominated for directing Only Murders in the Building, Indian-American filmmaker Mira Nair, and Finnish director Aki Kaurismäki. Roughly 200 people rallied in Park City's busy main street Sunday, shutting down traffic, demanding a ceasefire. Meanwhile, the group reports Sundance officials have been directing filmmakers not to publicly raise the topic of Palestine. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Gaza. where the death toll from Israel's 15-week war has topped 25,000. The reports Israel's blowing up entire neighborhoods of the besieged city of Khan Yunis. Al Jazeera reports Israel's targeted hospitals, ambulances, and schools in the city where thousands of civilians are sheltering. Meanwhile, the Wall Street Journal reports the United States, Qatar, and Egypt are pushing Israel and Hamas to take part in what the paper describes as a phased diplomatic process involving the release of hostages held in Gaza and the eventual withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza. After the report was published, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he rejects the proposal because it calls for the war to end. On Thursday, Netanyahu also publicly rejected calls by the Biden administration for the future establishment of a Palestinian state and called for Israel to be in control of the region from the river to the sea.
I clarified that in any arrangement in the foreseeable future, with an accord or without an accord, the state of Israel must have security control over the entire territory west of the Jordan River. This is a necessary condition. It clashes with the principle of sovereignty. What can you do? I tell this truth to our American friends, and I also stopped the attempt to impose a reality on us that would harm Israel's security. A prime minister in Israel should be able to say no even to our best friends, say no when necessary, and say yes when possible.
This comes as Netanyahu faces growing domestic pressure to bring home the remaining 130 hostages held in Gaza. Earlier today, the Israeli Knesset session was suspended after hostages' families disrupted a committee meeting demanding lawmakers do more to free their loved ones. Protesters also blocked entrances to the Knesset. For more, we're joined in Cairo, Egypt, by Mossab Abu Toha, Palestinian poet and author who was detained by Israeli authorities as he and his family fled Gaza. He wrote about his experience in a New Yorker article headlined, "A Palestinian Poet's Perilous Journey Out of Gaza." He's a columnist, a teacher, a founder of the Edward Said Library in Gaza, also the author of the award-winning book titled Things You May Find Hidden in My Ear, Poems from Gaza. Mossab, welcome back to Democracy Now! We talked to you just after you made it out of Gaza, following some of your family members. You had been detained. Can you describe that journey and the family members that are still left in Gaza, particularly your brother's wife, who is about to give birth?
For having me, and thanks to Democracy Now! For their continued coverage of the massacres that are taking place in Gaza. I was on the show a few weeks ago with you, and I described the horrific experience that I went through. Just yesterday, I watched a video of merciless Israeli soldiers stripping naked fellow Palestinian civilians, and they were beating them in the face, beating them in the stomach. They are outside in the open, in the cold weather. And I'm really surprised because when some media outlets communicated with the Israeli army about my case, they said, we deny everything he says. It's true, we took him, we interrogated him, but we did not attack him. But we can see in videos now that are coming out on social media by Israeli soldiers, the merciless treatment of Palestinians. So everything this army is doing is inhumane, is against whatever a child can think of doing. Even a child cannot do anything like that to a cat or to a mouse. Yesterday, my wife told me that my son, every time he is going to sleep, he starts to weep and sob and cry out loud sometimes. And he asks about his friends in Gaza. Are they eating well? Do they have water? And what about his parents, his grandparents, sorry, about his cousins? So what is going on right now in Gaza is really unprecedented. I can't think of another case in history where everything is taking place live. And the world leaders are supporting Israel with whatever they can. I was released thankfully after a lot of friends and media outlets wrote about my case. But there are still hundreds and hundreds of innocent people who are still under Israeli custody, who are being stripped naked, who are being beaten in the face and thrown outside in the cold. My parents and my siblings are still back in Gaza. My parents and three of my siblings and their children are in North Gaza, a place where there are only 6 ambulances for about 500,000 Palestinians there. They are running out of food, running out of water. Yesterday, my brother sent me a voice message from his phone about to cry. There is no bread for the children. There is no medicine for the cold and the flu. Not to mention that there is no medicine for people with chronic diseases. And we have been telling the whole world about this on social media, on TV, and no one is listening. I mean, Israel is accusing Egypt of closing the border with Gaza. But this is a big lie, because from day one, Israel bombed the Rafah border crossing. And they are bombing the aid trucks. And they are not allowing the UNRWA Commission General from going to North Gaza. So this is a very highly official person. And he's not allowed to go to Gaza because they are saying, oh, Hamas is stealing the aid from the people. But okay, let international staff go into the north of Gaza and see what's happening there. Why are you blocking the way between the northern part and the southern part? And they still... So from day one, Israel asked people from the north of Gaza to go south. And now they are continuing to bomb the southern parts of the Gaza Strip. So nowhere is safe, whether it's North Gaza or South Gaza. And there was, yesterday I posted something on social media, and someone with, I don't know what kind of people they are, and he said, why is your brother still in North Gaza? I mean, do you mean that if he had left North Gaza, he would live in peace in South Gaza? My friends and my neighbors and my wife's family are in North Gaza, and they are starving, and many of them were killed. So where do we go?
Can you talk about the telecommunications blackout that went on for something like 8 days and what that means for someone like your sister-in-law when it comes to giving birth?
Well, Israel was really cruel enough not only to cut off water and food from the people in Gaza, but they also cut electricity, they cut off internet connection, they cut off mobile services and landline services also. So this is not, I mean, this is not about me calling my brother, hi, how are you? Are you still alive? No. It's even when someone is being bombed, and many people are under the rubble, by the way, until now. They are under the rubble, and they send sometimes messages from their phone services. I mean, the only way people can communicate with the outside world is using an eSIM card that they could connect to networks outside of Gaza. So some people would send, oh, they bombed my neighbors out and they are under the rubble. Can someone please call the Red Cross? Can someone call the ambulances? So it's not only about disconnecting us from each other, but also when someone is wounded, is thrown in the street, and they try to reach out to an ambulance, there is no way they can do that. So I don't know what kind of cruelty that lead someone to cut water, food, to cut the connection, and also to cut their lives. So they are ending the lives of everyone in Gaza, especially children.
And now,
my sister, my brother's wife is pregnant. Yeah.
And when is she expected to give birth? She's in the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza?
Yes, she is in the Jabalia refugee camp. She was staying at a school, at an UNRWA school, with her husband and her 3 other children. But because the schools are very crowded and there is no water, no toilets to use, so they sometimes go back and forth between their family house and the UNRWA school in the Jabalia refugee camp. And by the way, our house was bombed on October 28th. And we were lucky because we were not there. So no one of us was harmed. But still, they are under the threat of being killed any moment. Not only by the Israeli airstrike, but also as a mother. My brother's wife is now pregnant. There is no guarantee that she is going to give birth just like other mothers give birth to their children. There is no cleanliness. There are no clothes for the newborn. There is no formula milk if needed. There is no medicine for the mother if she needs any treatment. So it's people. Many people are dying not because of the Israeli airstrikes, not because of the bombs, but also because there is no any sign of good life there.
I wanted to ask you, Mossab Abu-Toha, about the significance of massive protests around the world, and in the United States, particularly led by the Jewish community, what that means to you, and also South Africa bringing this case against Israel, charging it with genocide, to the International Court of Justice.
I was invited to read during an rabbi event for ceasefire, and we have been seeing the South African attempts to prove Israel's genocidal attempts to kill as many Gazans as possible. So we have African people who lived under the apartheid system, and we have Jews who were killed during the Holocaust in Europe. So they are now uniting together to stop this massacres. So this tells us as Gazans that we share the same suffering with other people. But unfortunately, this suffering is brought to us by other people now in Israel, Zionists, who are bringing this cycle of violence into us. And not for a year or two. It's been happening even before the Nakba in 1948. So this tells us that suffering is colorless, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a white or a Muslim or an Arab or a male or a female. It's enough for you to be a human, to sympathize with other people and to call for a ceasefire and to stand for your fellow human beings. And I hope that we can hear similar pleas and we can see other attempts, not by the free people of the world, but also if there is any free leader in the world who can step in and say out loud to stop the massacres, the non-stop massacres of the Palestinian people, and to call for a just solution to the Palestinian case.
Mossab, we spoke to you right before Rafat Al-Arir was killed in an Israeli airstrike in Gaza, the renowned Palestinian poet. I know he was a close friend of yours. I was wondering if you could share your remembrance of him, talk about his significance and how he died.
Well, first of all, Rifat's death is not a unique death. There are many other intelligent and wonderful and lovely people who were killed the same way. And by the way, many people don't know this, but Rifat's body is still under the rubble of the house that was bombed. So I want everyone to imagine that your brother, that your father, that your neighbor was not only killed, but his body is still under the rubble, and the body is starting to decay. I don't know what remains of Rifat's body. This really breaks my heart. I would like to remember Rifat as someone who was always ready to listen to our literary works. He liked to read some of Shakespeare's sonnets, of John Donne's poems. He was a huge fan of John Donne. I would like to remember Rifat as someone who loved to go to strawberry farms and pick strawberries with me and to play pun games. Rifat is someone who didn't want to die. And in his poem, If I Must Die, he didn't say, If I die, if I must die, if my death was a necessity, let it be a hope, let it be a tale, let it bring hope. And it's really very, very, very sympathetic and very, very beautiful to see that many people around the world are reading his poem and flying his kite. And I'm sure that Rifat is outside now, seeing. I mean, although his body is still under rubble, but his spirit, his soul is watching everything. He's watching the kites that are flying in the sky of the free world, And I believe that his only hope right now is that these kites will fly over Gaza to protect the children and mothers and fathers and everyone in Gaza from the Israeli airstrikes.
I want to end by asking about what you are calling for.